जय माँ। सो वी कंटिन्यू विद वर्ड्स ऑफ द मदर वॉल्यूम 1, दैट इज कलेक्टेड वर्क्स ऑफ द मदर वॉल्यूम 13। एंड एज वी नो दिस वॉल्यूम इज ऑन श्योरबिंदो, द मदर, द आश्रम, ऑरोविल, इंडिया। सो इट्स अ वेरी वेरी स्पेशल वॉल्यूम। इट डजंट कंटेन वेरी लॉन्ग पैसेजेस एक्सेप्ट व्हेन शी टॉक्स अबाउट ऑरोविल, बट दिस वेरी पावरफुल, ऑल दैट वी वॉन्ट टू नो एज द कोर। So, last time we read about Sri Aurobindo, and today we'll read about what is Sri Aurobindo's work. So, I look at it very simply. Sri Aurobindo is coming from the future. Maybe centuries ahead, somebody comes, like we have stories of aliens coming. So, Sri Aurobindo comes from the future. So, when he comes from the future, right now there is a lot of melee, din, noise, all this is going on. And so people are too busy with that. They want to address these problems. He says the solution is the future. But very difficult for human beings who are too much onto the surface, appearances with wars going on, this burning, that burning, to understand even or wait to listen. So there are a lot of people who, even after turning to Sri Aurobindo, they are constantly worried about deep state. They are constantly worried about, you know, the immediate thing. So the solution is the future, actually, because, you know, like we were talking just now about the war. Now, as long as man has these warring instincts, the roots lie in the division, and you cannot, unless you address the roots, you will have only temporary solutions. Now, temporary solutions may sometimes be palliative, sometimes dangerous, because they only allow the dangerous factors to regroup, rearm. So one has to at some point understand that, well, if one wants a solution, it is the future. And that's why the mother says some very interesting things. She says that Sri Aurobindo belongs to the future. Yeah. Sri Aurobindo came to tell the world of the beauty of the future that must be realized. He came to give not a hope but a certitude of the splendor towards which the world moves. The world is not an unfortunate accident, it is a marvel which moves towards its expression. The world needs the certitude of the beauty of the future, and Sri Aurobindo has given that assurance. So this is what should be what we should live by. And then we should be like, how do I prepare myself for the future? Okay, supposing I take it that Sri Aurobindo comes as a messenger of the future and has come to bid us that, look here, prepare yourself for a luminous future. So how to prepare for it? That also mother gave a very beautiful message. And she says that Sri Aurobindo belongs to the future. He is the messenger of the future. He still shows us the way to follow in order to hasten the realization of a glorious future fashioned by the divine will. And unless mankind learns to surrender to the divine will consciously, not just follow tenets of the religion, that means he has to take up the spiritual evolution. All those who want to collaborate for the progress of humanity and for India's luminous destiny must unite in a clairvoyant aspiration and in an illumined work. And for that, she says, the first condition is to be sincere and faithful. Okay, so very simple messages, but very powerful in their impact. To understand these teachings better and try to put it into practice is certainly the best way of showing our gratitude to him for all the light, knowledge and force which he has so generously brought to the earth. Now this, many people don't understand this, and while I am not in favor of reading the records of yoga to, you know, practice, some people start doing it. If you read it, it's silly even to imagine that. Our practice, Sri Aurobindo has given in synthesis of yoga, is basically the sum and substance of record of yoga, if one wants to really look at it like that. And if you see the timeline, Sri Aurobindo was writing in his records, and something very similar he is writing in the Synthesis of Yoga, but in a language and in a way that is comprehensible to us. But otherwise, so I have decided to take an All India Magazine issue on this because people ask. Otherwise, if you really read the records, what it strikes you is that what a patient labor he has done. Every aspect of the spiritual realization, every side. And then at the end of all this journey, which is basically till 1926, 27, you can say, what does he tell us? How to do the yoga? He says, open to the mother. It's something unimaginable that his whole effort was how to make it easier and easier for all of us, because he had seen the difficulty. And the other thing is that I find very interesting, because a lot of people now, when they read Sri Aurobindo, they start seeing, I think today also we're having little discussion on the recording group, that in the past there, people have a tendency to compare what is given in the Vedas, the Upanishads or the Puranas with what Sri Aurobindo brings. Now, it's a wrong way to go about it, because you will find something. But actually you can understand the past in the light of Sri Aurobindo. So sometime when you have read Sri Aurobindo, at least with me it has happened. So having read all the scriptures, and I just felt that a lot of things are missing, a lot of question marks, unanswered questions, very frankly. And you almost, which included the Gita, I mean, which is again one of the best. But things are missing. But now when you look back, in Sri Aurobindo's light, you find, oh, okay, there is a door here, there is a window there, there is some hint here. But that's a hint. You can't take that this truth was known and it was developed. Certainly not. So in the light of Sri Aurobindo, we can understand the past. But we cannot understand Sri Aurobindo with the light of the past. It's the same thing which Kenupanishad says, that which the mind cannot understand, but that with which the mind can be understood. So I look at it like that if one wants to understand the past, read Sri Aurobindo. And then when you go back to the Vedas, Upanishad, if you wish to go back, it's not needed to go back. Some people ask me, is it really required? It's not required, because everything is there. But if one wants to go back, then you will begin to understand a glimpse here and there. But otherwise, it's complete in itself, because it gives the complete truth. And the reason why I say so is because there is, after reading Sri Aurobindo, not one single unanswered question at the present development of the race. After 2000 years, I don't know whether man will have questions or not. But at present, all the mental questions that mankind has, which have not been answered in the scriptures of the past, and there are quite a few, we have spoken about it. So all of them are answered here. And then in that light, when we look back, and all the problems of the present, for example, the war. Nowadays people are talking about peace. Sri Aurobindo has foreseen everything. He writes about the passing of war and whether what is really required. All these round table talks and all this doesn't work. He spoke about the economic warfare. He spoke about commercial barbarism. He spoke about utilitarianism as a disease. Everything is there. Actually, you feel that he was living through centuries ahead. And that's one of the things we find in record of yoga, how Sri Aurobindo is developing Trikala Drishti. It's mind-boggling. Right from the intent of the crow and the ant. So one may say, what is there in moving an ant? Extremely difficult. Because ant has practically very little consciousness. It's much easier to move human beings. At least there is some consciousness. It's driven absolutely mechanically. So if you can move that, that's something very, it's a tremendous power to read the intent of a crow, which way is it's going to fly. From that he begins and goes on perfecting at every level, time perfection. For example, it goes on to, he writes that supposing he saw a time 4:53, so and so will come. Then he notes that there were few seconds difference. So he wants it to be perfect. Then he sees where is this Trikal Drishti getting mixed with telepathy and clairvoyance and suggestions of the illumined mind. It's unimaginable the kind of perfection he has developed. And all this he has gathered to give it to us. He doesn't want us or expect us to do all this sadhana. All that he wants us to open to the mother, and rest will be done. So just, we cannot even imagine. And then comes this powerful message for all of us to remember. Man is the creation of yesterday. So let's be very clear. Man as he is today is not going to really remain as he is. He has to either go beyond, or he has to evolve into a higher humanity, or it will collapse. Now this collapse may take place in 100 ways. I mean, it seems so many doors have been opened right now. There is a meteor or something which is so close to, you know, this time they find it difficult to say whether it will hit or it will not hit. Now so many doors through which options have been opened for a kind of humanity which is refusing to progress. It will collapse. It may be through war, it may be through a meteor, it may be through an epidemic, who knows. But then there is an option which is, should be the option A, that we can evolve. And that is the pressure on humanity right now. So the mother starts with this. Sri Aurobindo's work is a unique earth transformation. Why? Because there have been several transformations. Sometimes one word changes the meaning. Because transformation, this earth always had transformation. When you have plant emerging out of stone, it's a transformation. When you see animal emerging out of plant, it's a transformation. And all the categories, so they are all transformation. But here it's a unique earth transformation in the sense that this transformation will make it irreversible. There cannot be a collapse of this new race back into the darkness. The reason is, one crosses the line of ignorance. So the man of tomorrow will be free of karma, because he is constantly living with the divine will. There is no other mixture there. Karma is the ego. As long as one thinks I am a doer, there is karma and the law of karma. The moment the doership is gone, you are nothing else but the divine consciousness flowing through you. There is no karma. There is no responsibility in a royal way. So that is the royal road of freedom. So, unique earth transformation. Sri Aurobindo incarnated in a human body the supramental consciousness. So this another which people say that, well, did he achieve, not achieve? Again, records of yoga, it's very clear. People sometimes type the wrong word when they search. For example, they type the word supramental. They type the word supermind. You will find few references. Type the word vijnana as V-I-G-N-A. A-N-A. M-A-Y-A. You will see plenty of references. All of them relate to supermind. I am talking of records of yoga. Because recently I had some talk that some monk of Sri Ramakrishna Ashram has written a book, and he is very fascinated by reading Sri Aurobindo, but he says Sri Aurobindo himself did not achieve the supramental. And he asked my views. I said, then what is all this that he is writing? What is the key? What he is looking for? Most people do this, app reading. So either you read from the book methodically, which is the best way. Then you will know that Vijnanamaya in records of yoga is all about supramental. Later on he talks about the three layers of supermind, which is there as the Vijnanamaya. Because at the time Sri Aurobindo is using a certain terminology which comes from the Sanskrit roots. But if you are looking for supramental, that's why Mother is saying he incarnated. He incarnated in a human body the supramental consciousness, and has not only revealed to us the nature of the path to follow and the method of following it so as to arrive at the goal, but has also by his own personal realization given us the example. He has provided us with the proof that the thing can be done, and the time is now to do it. Repeatedly Mother says time is pressing. Now here again people talk about physical transformation straight away. Sri Aurobindo, there is a very clear letter. He says, oh, that is the last thing which will come. And he speaks about a couple of thousand years. It's a letter. He never said that physical transformation will take place within lifetime. Yet, the task was to establish supramental consciousness, which they did. It's just that mother went ahead, several steps ahead, because of love for us. You know, she was compressing 3,000 years into 300 years. But nowhere Sri Aurobindo says that, well, I promise that I'll make sure that there will be physically transformed beings. On the contrary, he says that is the far off distant thing. It is the inevitable last result, the crown of this whole movement. Body is always the last. So people say that, what example? But if you see in terms of consciousness, all the things that were established in Sri Aurobindo and the mother, there, if you read their life, you will see it abundantly. And I am saying that with full responsibility, read the life of saints. I have read plenty. You will not find this example anywhere, even remotely near. Teachings, nice teachings are there everywhere. There are some powers, all that is there, without a doubt. But if you really read their life and how they lived, very naturally they lived, without making a show or a do. And yet, so many miracles in the mind, as the mother said. At least I look at, I mean, my own life, I'm sure everybody's life. If I look back 10 years back, if I look at 5 years back, if I look at 2 years back, what a change that comes. And it seems very natural because it goes through natural events. You don't realize it. It's not like magic, and yet it is a magic, because if I look back, so sometimes people ask something which I have written 5 years back and they would want to, they would say, but you had written it. I said, yes, but I have progressed. If I have to write the same thing, I'll write differently. And now I can understand that why Sri Aurobindo, when later on he is correcting the synthesis of yoga, he says, oh, you really want me to come back to that level. It's amazing. And how this change comes? Nothing we have done, at least I know for myself. There is nothing special which one has done. And yet the change comes so perceptibly, so inevitably, and I would say despite ourselves, and using everything of life as a catalyst for the change. So this is the work of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, the kind of, and this is true of most of the sadhaks that I know of. So she says, never for an instant vacillate in the belief that the mighty work of change taken up by Sri Aurobindo is going to culminate in success. So she asks us never to vacillate, obviously. Always people say, but shouldn't we doubt? So my answer is, just doubt yourself, but don't doubt Sri Aurobindo and the mother. You can doubt yourself, because what is it? Often people do mental analysis. So I was sharing this even today with someone. I said, see, you're doing all this mental analysis and trying to understand things. Now imagine that you are within darkness. You don't have a torch light. You don't have a candle light. And you're trying to guess what is what. Suddenly light comes. Will your perspective not change? And yes, it'll change. I said, so seek the light. Because you won't understand. In the present state of human mind, it's a ill-lit lamp. We don't know the next step in front, and we are trying to analyze, and let alone understanding Sri Aurobindo is far, far cry. Even life we don't understand. And yet people insist. So I said, the only direction should be move toward the future, keep on growing in light. All the rest is for later. Because the more we grow, the more we'll understand. And without the light, darkness cannot understand darkness. It will only see some blotches, some print, some projections of its own mind. That there is a ghost here, there is a snake here, and there is... because that's how darkness operates. So she says, for that indeed is a fact. There is not a shadow of doubt as to the issue of the work we have in hand. The transformation is going to be, nothing will ever stop it. Nothing will frustrate the decree of the omnipotent. So that is very clear. So what we should do? Cast away all diffidence and weakness and resolve to endure bravely a while before the great day arrives, when the long battle turns into an everlasting victory. This is the long battle. over our own self, the lower self, the lesser self. That's the battle. That's worth, if there is a peace accord there, and this should not be accord. There cannot be peace between the lower members and the higher members. They have to be either transformed and concede to the law, higher law. All, as Sri Aurobindo writes in Savitri, all here must learn to obey the higher law. The same thing is applying everywhere in the world. Either you have to accede to the higher law or you will be destroyed. There is no middle path. Not in this age. There was a time when one could do it. But they are not in this age where there is such a strong evolutionary current. So she says that, well, we have to endure. That's very important. Endure bravely. Don't cry. Don't be like a sissy baby. Yeah, suffering is there. You have to endure. Later on, you'll laugh at it. But that's a passage. Because change doesn't come. We have a very good opinion about ourselves. And then the cleansing starts. That cleansing can be very painful because all the dirt which we thought was natural to us, when it is cleansed, when the purification process is extremely painful. But without Shuddhi, there is no Mukti. So often there are people, sometimes very interesting, because they write, oh, for example, my so-and-so is not well. I am somehow holding on to faith. What is the divine doing? I say, you should just say that I am very attached. That is the problem. It's not about divine. You have taken this path. You have to put all yourself into it. But at least acknowledge. Nothing, no sin in being attached. But you have to understand, I'm extremely attached. Maybe to this person. Maybe to a certain thing. I want the divine to act in a certain way. That's an old format. New creation doesn't work out like that. At some point, one has to make a decisive choice. That's it. Now, mother, out of compassion, takes us and, you know, hand holds us through everything, lets us stumble, picks up again. But basically it's because of attachment. So she says, do not cling to any idea, any viewpoint, anything, and have the thirst for the future. So this is going to be, and in the process we have to endure the battle bravely. This battle in most human beings is in the lower vital parts. Very clearly the mother has said that this is the field of the battle, Kurukshetra, our own Kurukshetra. And that's where we have to endure the process. And then she says something very interesting, because people often have these seminars on Sri Aurobindo. Seminars are one of the worst ways, because you have different people giving different opinions, which is okay. Nothing wrong with it, provided they are deep into Sri Aurobindo and the mother. Then there will be at least some fundamentals. They will not say, like I heard once, some minister saying that, it's really how miraculous that Sri Aurobindo was born on 5th December and he left his body on 5th December. He was mixing up with Buddha Devs. This also is not true of Buddha Dev, but there is a Janashruti, common belief, that Buddha was born on the same day, on the same full moon night, and he left the body. So they want to make a, now at least some fundamentals should be right, not like they say mother is a disciple of Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo himself is saying that her coming has helped my sadhana. But she reminds us that we should not make Sri Aurobindo into a dogma. That what I am saying, the way I am looking at it, that's the only thing which is true. So she says, we have faith in Sri Aurobindo. He represents for us something we formulate to ourselves with words which seem to us the most exact for expressing our experience. These words are evidently the best according to us for formulating our experience. So they are okay at different stages as we go. It's like relationship with God. So there is a stage, the lowest stage is when we have fear of God. God fear is the lowest stage. That's how Sri Aurobindo puts it. But then as you grow, the relation changes until you become friends to God. And when you are friend to God, your whole method changes, because friend is a friend with whom you can share everything, with whom you can literally, as you know, Arjuna and Krishna puts an arm around. So similarly, the understanding changes as we go along the path, and then new ways, new possibilities, new knowledge emerges. So the expressions of today need not be the expression of tomorrow. And so she reminds us, but if in our enthusiasm we were convinced that they are the only appropriate words to express correctly what Sri Aurobindo is and the experience he has given us, we would become dogmatic and be on the point of founding a religion. So it should not be done like that. Nobody has to announce, ki, look here, he is the avatar, he is the avatar. For you he is the avatar, it's your revelation. And somebody talks to you, can say. But there are people who may not understand this. But they may still think he is the pioneer. They may use words like that. Or they may not, they may say like someone that he is a great master. He is the, maybe the greatest of masters, somebody may say so. It's okay. So there are different ways that people will connect with him. Because otherwise we'll either turn into a fixed religion or cut away many who are not ready for a higher realization. So one has to go understand this. He who has a spiritual experience and a faith formulates it in the most appropriate words for himself. But if he is convinced that this expression is the only correct and true one for this experience and faith, he becomes dogmatic and tends to create a religion. So this way she cautions us. And on similar lines, something other which each one has his own idea and finds out suitable sentences from Sri Aurobindo's writings to support his views. This is not only common. It is sometimes used deliberately, using Sri Aurobindo's words as a sword. See, I told you. And mother's words, of course. And she says that we should not do because he is too vast for anyone. Those who oppose such views can also find suitable sentences from his writings. That is the way mutual opposition works. So as I was saying, sharing the other day recently, I met someone who lived here in the ashram for 11 years. Then mother sent him back to lead a normal life. I mean, get married, and the person got married. But when I went to the room, I felt it's a sadhak's room in the ashram. Absolutely. That was my impression. That suddenly it's like a zone transition. I just entered the place and I was this is like another sadhak's room. It's right in the ashram, subtle physical ashram. That person is no more. But his son was, sharing that how to a letter of somebody who wrote that, I don't feel like going to the playground. I've forgotten how to read or meditate or whatever. And so I feel very bad because I am unable to go to the playground and participate in sports activities. And the mother says, you have not come here to become a sportsman. So absolutely, he said, very good. So I don't need to go. To the other person, who then asked again, because though he was regular, but he said, okay, this is very nice. Maybe I should not go. I should just sit and meditate. Mother says, no, it will be much better if you continue going to the sports ground and are regular in it. You see, some people make absolute rules. Even sometimes that if you go out, you have fallen from the path, which is so strange, as if path is something outer. Path is always an inner thing. So all these things, maybe for you it's very good. Again, that you should not go. That's very good. We can't make a rule. But for somebody else, it's a different story. When you look at how Satprem will go and come back, that's his journey. So each one has his own unique journey. So we should not use words to... Nothing can be truly done until Sri Aurobindo's total view of things is taken. So personally, I feel speaking on Sri Aurobindo, leave aside responsibility, it has to be only on the basis of a mandate given by the mother. Inwardly, now, in today's context. But at least one should have read all of Sri Aurobindo. This is what I really feel. Sri Aurobindo and the mother, when you read completely, then because you get the automatically gestalt of the teaching. You know where is what. Otherwise, it's likely to, just read a few works here and there and go into a different direction. So I personally feel those who really want to prepare themselves for this kind of offering, they should read entirely the works of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. It doesn't matter. It's actually, one can read it. People have this idea. Of course, one should start sooner the better, because after an age it becomes difficult. But at least one should start that process anytime. Again, see, now if you take it that, you know, we have faith in Sri Aurobindo, but there are different ways of expressing. You feel, oh, mother is so Catholic, so liberal, so wide, which she is. But now see how this can be misapplied. So she is reminding us. The essential mistake was to have considered Sri Aurobindo's teaching as one among the spiritual teachings. Because, why she is saying this? Because you can compare things which are at par. Now, Sri Aurobindo has gone further and brought in a vision. Again, it should not be based on sentiments. Somebody recently asked me a question that, well, his guru said that he is the Kalki avatar and he is the future Superman which Sri Aurobindo has predicted. Now, he is teaching basically the standard Kundalini Yoga. So I would normally remain quiet, and many of his followers used to ask me and said, no, you know, I would normally, it's each one is free and should not, you don't talk about anybody's guru loosely. That's my, this thing. So then one of his disciples got very drawn towards Sri Aurobindo and the mother and remained in touch. So he asked me that, is it possible that somebody at that level could be deluded? Now this is a very loaded question. Because he believed he is an avatar. And no doubt he is a realized person, is certain. There is no doubt about that part. I am not doubting that. So I simply said, you know what, Brahma and Vishnu were also deluded. And it's there in the story. Brahma's Mohabhangi is there in Bhagavat. I said the great gods in the overmind have been deluded. So delusion, and the mother predicted this. So I said, if you do a Google search right now, you know about your guru saying he is the avatar, you will see there are 5 more claimants of Kalki avatar on Google search. Actually, I am saying, this I wrote after searching. I knew there are, mother has written in one of the places, oh, suddenly you see there are many Kalkis, many Christ who have come up. She spoke about it. There are few claimants to even Mother Meera's reincarnation. We have no issues, each one's own journey. That's okay. But you must understand. So I asked them, what are they teaching? For instance, one of the claimants to mothers. So when people ask, I say, see, let's not go into individual personalities. What is she teaching? She says, you must take care of the poor. You must take care of, you know. So open such places, take care, kindness. I said, very good. So basically philanthropy. Now what does mother speak about? The solution, the problem and the solution to human misery. So it's easy to say, anybody can claim. But at the end of the day, again someone spoke about somebody's guru being. I said, what is it teaching? What is the final product? I'm using a very business language. What is he going to give us? He said, liberation. I said, plenty of people have done that. So you see, when you go just a little deep, you don't have to really go very further. But people use such things, they claim. So that's where she says you can't put it, and little reading will tell us. And the work done here now as one among the many aspects of the divine works. So this also people say, there are many ashrams. This is one of them. So I said, please come and stay here. You will understand what this ashram is. Sri Aurobindo at one place says, I have been to at least 6 ashrams. I can almost say the same, maybe a little more. Of course. Ashram trotting. Most of the places, you have place for meditation, you have library, you have satsang hall, you have food facility. Some people add a little bit of, you know, medical and all. But these are framework and paraphernalia basically to ensure that the individual leads a life where he can engage in meditation, reading and finding God. That's it. But here, these activities are part of divine work. They have to change, whether sadhaks look at it like that or not. Stitching, sewing, music, dance, painting, teaching, everything has to change. So it is a different kind of work than any other ashram, and that's why the stress is felt by everyone. It's not like a support organization so that there are some special sadhaks who can sit and meditate. We can't meditate, so we sort of create an environment which is conducive. No, there is nothing like that. So she says it's a different kind of divine work than what is done elsewhere. This has falsified your basic position and has been the cause of all the difficulties and confusions. If this mistake is corrected in your mind and in your attitude, all other difficulties will disappear easily. Very beautifully, this called the French finish, if I may say so. Mother is saying something, but with what a refined way. Why? Because the question is on Gandhi. So now you imagine, elsewhere she is saying, oh, this Gandhian non-violence. So the question is, criticizing a friend's paper on Gandhi, I quoted Sri Aurobindo's thought on non-violence and some other principles that have become absolutes in Gandhism. The friend protested and so on and so on. So the friend protested that admiration for Sri Aurobindo should not blind us to other great men. All, according to the friend, have part glimpses of the truth. I felt it was a mistake to put Sri Aurobindo along with the rest, and I want to reply in some detail on this point. So you see the difficulty. Now how mother is saying, there is in it a kind of touch of, you know, when the divine, in Hindi I have an expression, ustara chalana, you know, it does it with such a refineness. She is expressing something, but in what a perfect way. How she is saying, in the effort of humanity to reach the truth and manifest it, all those who have made a discovery, however small it may be, have a place, and Gandhi is one of them. No, she is not discarding him outright. He's saying, however small, so we can understand. So Gandhi is one of them. Now I don't know whether to call it praise. That's why I use the word. What a finish. Now she comes to Sri Aurobindo. But the great mistake has always been to oppose these partial discoveries instead of unifying them in a supreme harmony. That is why humanity is still groping in the dark. See, she has said what she has to say, and now she gives the punchline. Sri Aurobindo has come to reveal that this supreme harmony exists and to show us the way to discover it. So there is a place for non-violence. Okay, yes, no doubt about it. There is a place for everything. Now, all of them are partial glimpses. There is a place for meditation. There is a place for bhakti. There is a place for works. There is a place for education. There is a place for politics. There is a place for so many ideologies, religions. But Sri Aurobindo gives us the unifying, not just unifying, but harmonizing vision where everything is in its own place. So he says you can't bring again the same thing, putting them together and comparing them or contrasting them. You see the harmony that Sri Aurobindo brings, higher harmony. Very beautiful, she says about Savitri, which Sri Aurobindo considered as his most important work. About Savitri, this was, as we know, that, you know, Hutab's paintings were being displayed and the mother gave this message. One, what is Savitri? She summarizes. The daily record of the spiritual experience of the individual who has written. This very profound, mind-boggling. So, she could have written the spiritual experience of Sri Aurobindo. Why she is writing? Who has written? Because Sri Aurobindo is completely identified at once. There it is, Sri Aurobindo, who is like Valmiki, connecting the past with the future. So it is in that consciousness that he is writing. because there are also Ashapati's experiences which are integrated, and he is opening the road to the future. So these, of course, they are Sri Aurobindo's experiences, but spiritual experiences of the individual who has written it also is very interesting, because people say Ashapati's experiences are Sri Aurobindo's experiences and Savitri's experiences are mother's experiences. Okay, that is true. But Sri Aurobindo is writing them all. So he is completely aware of those experiences. And the mother explains this. She says he knew everything that she was experiencing. So we can equally say that all the experiences are Sri Aurobindo's experiences. I mean, it's understood actually. Logically, it's understood. Then second is a complete system of yoga which can serve as a guide for those who want to follow the integral sadhana. Here again, people say, no, no, it is only their yoga. There is nothing about what we have to do. And there are several places where what we have to do. A whole program given to Savitri in 18 lines is the sadhana that we have to follow. After that, Savitri expands, and it's very clear, because Savitri's yoga, very clearly, she heard the voice, for man you have to do it. You have to open this path for man. This is not there in Ashapati. Ashapati's yoga is not described at all. He is simply shown as a chosen one. He is paradropped, if I may say so. And you just suddenly start with what experiences of Ashapati. Suddenly Sri Aurobindo would summarize, all this has been done. All this was done in that strong son of force. All this was already done. So you suddenly wonder, what is it that Ashapati did? People pick up those lines that, you know, in moments when the inner lamps are lit. Now that there are general hints, but Ashapati's yoga as such is not described. The results are described. The results of what the higher being will be, the results when he goes through the worlds. But as far as human beings are concerned, Ashapati himself says, mother, you have to come down. And she says, what you have won is thine, but ask no more. So the Divine Mother literally tells him exactly their own story. So tells him that, see, you have arrived at this tapasya, man is not ready. Simple. Man can't do this sadhana. So you have to stay and continue to help mankind till it is ready. That's how she ultimately tells him. But he says, no, 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 you have to come down. If you come, you know, things can be done. Then she comes. And that's when the mother, she goes through that challenge of human life, question of destiny, human love, very, very human love. All the experiences, all that is not described. Nobody tells us about Ashapati's wife. People ask us. Sometimes they ask, what was the name of his wife? Well, the name of his wife was Malvi. But point is that that's not really important. Ashapati has just spoken of her as the queen. She is a representative of humanity. So again, Dhamat Sinha's wife, that's not the point. Point is that Ashapati's yoga, how it is done, we don't know. We know the results. But mother has to open the path, do it for man and show him the way, everything. So that's where we have in book 7, the yoga that mother undertakes, all the finding of the psychic being, which is such a long yoga. Entry into the inner countries, the three Madonnas, then discovery of the soul, the state in which you have to go inside, the difficulties you meet, the first channel challenges from the physical consciousness, all that is there. So physical consciousness will not let you go inside, it will keep pushing you outside. Then the vital consciousness will come and fabricate experiences, intermediate zone. Then the mind, which will come and give you false certitudes, halfway homes to rest. Everything is there. If you really take the sadhana, it's very clear. And then as one comes nearer and nearer, one becomes more and more humble. It's like a god's, at first he stepped into a knight of God. All your support systems are taken away. And suddenly you have no prop, no ground to stand upon. Then you are near the soul. And then she says that she only knew that soul and God are. But she didn't know where. And where it is hidden, then the discovery of the soul, the awakening of the centers, opening of the centers from above downwards, and then entry into the cosmic consciousness. All that is described. Absolutely human. So this is the second thing, a complete system of yoga, which can serve as a guide for those who want to follow the integral sadhana. Well, Mother's writings, it's all there. So it's not that one has to read Savitri again to practice the yoga, but the system is there. Number three, the yoga of the earth in its ascension toward the divine. Nowhere, anywhere in the entire spiritual teachings of anyone we see this. Again, it's hinted in the Puranas. But that is in retrospect. As I said, when you have that light, you can see. Many things I have understood from the Puranic legend based on Shurbindo's light. Because one can see, okay, the ascension of the earth and the evolutionary story, 10 parables, we all have read Vishnu's 10 avatars. But who told us? And it's so obvious that the story of progressive transformations upon earth. Very clearly, not only consciousness, but also of the form. So, it is the yoga of the earth. Earth is engaged in yoga, and through yoga, new possibilities are coming up. And fourth, the experience of the Divine Mother. But what kind of experiences? The experience of the Divine Mother in her effort to adapt herself to the body she has taken, and the ignorance and the falsity of the earth upon which she has incarnated. So she has to take all the challenges that human beings take, and she has to adapt, find the way through them, finally battle against death. So this is her words on Savitri. The importance of Savitri is immense. Its subject is universal. Its revelation is prophetic. The time spent in its atmosphere is not wasted. So for me, like, even if you carry Savitri, I know people holding Savitri. It's an atmosphere. Atmosphere is not confined to merely reading. Even Shurbinder, the mother's books carry an atmosphere. But Savitri particularly, I have seen, it carries a special atmosphere. Just carrying it, putting on your heart, it soaks away. I mean, at least I have seen few people, not only me, but I have seen few people.
In the book with those
lines.
Yes. Even any other book with those lines.
Those lines, yes. Any other book with those lines. Absolutely. I have seen that it takes away the... Something it does like magic. It's like there is a power which emanates from the very words and the lines of Savitri, and it acts like a magic. So, well, atmosphere of Savitri is not just about reading, but wherever it is. So this what here we'll stop today, and maybe just one last thing, that Shobindo's symbol, particularly because somebody asked that this is a symbol similar to the symbol on the flag of Israel. So they were keen to know. Yeah. It's there. Yeah, because if you look at it, the 6 stars, so I had to tell them, and this of course many people may not know. The symbol on the flag of Israel is the symbol of David. He was a great king and a legendary king. I mean, I have read his story, very inspiring. And you know, he is, I think Solomon was his son. And yeah, huge star, that's right. And some people say that it was his armor. So it is a 6-pointed star. And actually, one of the meaning of that star is the meeting of God and man, heaven and earth. So to that extent, it's exactly this part. The ascending triangle, as the mother says, the descending triangle represents Satchidanand, that is the God. The ascending triangle represents the aspiring answer from matter under the form of life, light and love. So it is the divine which touches first, and the awakening comes as a result of that. Even the aspiration is born when divine has touched you. It's not like I'm aspiring. Now if you are aspiring, you are sure to reach. Because he has already touched you. So the logic here is, first the divine awakens. I've seen some people write such beautiful experiences. They're suddenly struggling and mother suddenly as if has kindled a light in the heart. This is so true. You cannot aspire unless the divine has chosen. Till then preparation is going on. Yes. One who has chosen the infinite has been chosen by the infinite. And the moment aspiration is kindled means it's already been granted. Now this is for the joy of the journey, for, you know, whatever. Like mother says, it's for the joy of the journey because it's already been granted. also human some effort, but it has been and it prepares us, no doubt. So the descending triangle, God, ascending triangle is the response of earth. In the flag of Israel, the seal, one of the explanations is the meeting point of heaven and earth, which is an absolutely Vedic tradition of meeting of earth and heaven and of God and man. So to that extent it applies. But how is it going to be fulfilled? There comes the special part of the symbol, because in both you have the equilateral triangles meeting perfectly. The junction of both, the central square, is the perfect manifestation. Having at its center the avatar of the Supreme, the lotus. So it is only possible when the supramental manifestation takes place, and then water is always multiplicity's creation. If you look back into the Vedic understanding of creation, at first it is the waters, cosmic waters, and in that the lotus, the avatar, the water inside the square represents the multiplicity, the creation. So very evidently, I have a feeling that the people who made the symbol, I don't know whether it's from the Kabbalah tradition, but nobody knows the real story. But it's quite likely that intuitively the person captured some truth, because as far as this is concerned. But then this one should know that Sri Aurobindo's symbol went through several modifications. In principle it was the same, but initially it was not equilateral triangles but isosceles triangles. And Pavitra Da would make and show it. This, what we have today, is two equilateral triangles and the perfect square with the water and the lotus in the center. That has been the final symbol approved by the mother. But it went through a series of transitions. So we all must become that symbol. Aspiration within us, the divine grace touching us, and the supramental center where Sri Aurobindo and the mother are seated, even though all creation is all around. Chema.